The details of the murders at the small house in the 4600 block of Deerfield Drive in Pensacola, Florida, were horrific.
The evidence will show that Donald Hartung beat John in the head with a hammer and slit his throat. The evidence will show that this defendant beat his mother in the head with a hammer and slit her throat. And the evidence will show that when Richard came home from work on that Tuesday, this defendant shot Richard in the side of the head and slit his throat, just as he did his mother and John.
The victims were 78-year-old Von Seal Smith and her two sons, 49-year-old John Smith and 47-year-old Richard Smith. Assistant State's Attorney Bridget Jensen told a jury nearly 5 years later that Von Seal spent the majority of her time sitting in the recliner in her living room and ordering from QVC. Her husband of 47 years had passed away in 2012, and so she lived at home with her two adult sons, Richard and John. Richard, also known as RT, worked as a computer specialist for the Department of Homeland Security. He was not married and didn't have any kids. He basically worked, went home, and took care of his mother and brother John. John reportedly functioned a little slower than most people from an issue at birth. He was a cart pusher at Walmart and had worked there for over 20 years. He also wasn't married and didn't have any kids. Neighbors would later say that the three of them were not very social, that they mostly kept to themselves. But on Friday, July 31st, 2015, officers with the Escambia County Sheriff's Office responding to a wellness check found all three murdered in their home. Agent Andrew Smith was one of the first officers to go inside. The doors were all locked, but they were able to gain entry by using a credit card on the back door. As soon as he walked in, Agent Smith smelled a foul odor, like a dead body. He saw a small white dog running around and noticed dog feces on the floor. He and his fellow officers called out, "Sheriff's office, come out." As they walked down the hallway, the smell was overwhelming. There was a laundry room that's door was closed. They opened the door and saw blood spatter around two large mounds of clothing and blankets.
So do the blood spatter. I put on some gloves and then I started to peel back the clothing and the blankets. And as I started to peel it back, I saw a large shoe. It looked on to be on like a white man's body. I touched the ankle. It was cold. Then there was another large mass to my right. It was like on like a love seat. So I did the same. I started peeling the clothing back and the blankets. And then I saw it was a bare white foot. It also appeared to be a male. I touched it. It was cold and there was a lividity present.
He pronounced the two males, Richard and John, deceased at 11:14 a.m. They then continued searching the residence and came across a bedroom door that was closed. Inside this room was another huge mound of clothing and blankets on the floor. Agent Smith again started slowly peeling back the layers, which revealed the hand of an elderly woman. It was cold to the touch, and there was lividity in the fingers. He pronounced Von Seal Smith dead at 11:17 a.m. It wouldn't take long for investigators at the scene to discover that there was another, third son of Von Seal's, who lived in his own house nearby. 58-year-old Donald Hartung was Von Seal's first son from a prior relationship. Richard and John were his half-brothers. It also wouldn't take long before investigators zeroed in on him as a suspect. There is that saying, after all, about motive, means, and opportunity, and Donald arguably had all three. And there was something else about Donald that caught their attention. When they went and searched his house, they found a Ouija board, figurines, and various books about the Wiccan religion. At a press conference about the murders, Escambia County Sheriff David Morgan said they believed that all three victims were beaten with a claw hammer before their throats were then slit. Richard was also shot in the head. Sheriff Morgan said they also believe that they were killed as part of a ritual in anticipation of that Friday's blue moon.
Initial research has led us to believe that there's a potential that it was a ritualistic killing. Our person of interest has some ties to a faith and or religion that is indicative of that. It's witchcraft. I'll say that right now.
And so 3 months after the bodies were discovered, Donald Hartung was arrested and charged with the murders. The media dubbed him the Blue Moon Killer, but at trial, prosecutors seemed to abandon that theory and now had another one.
And the evidence will show, ladies and gentlemen, that he did it all for their money.
Did Donald Hartung murder his mother and 2 brothers? Or was the real killer still out there? This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 105. Coloring your hair in the comfort of your own home sounds pretty amazing, doesn't it? You don't have to go sit in a hair salon for hours, spending time and money that you don't want to spend. And now, what if I told you that you don't even have to leave your house to get your color? Instead of going to the convenience store and standing in the color aisle, looking at all the different variations of colors and not knowing what to get, you can now get gorgeous professional hair color delivered right to your door, starting at just $22. I'm talking about Madison Reed, game-changing color that you can do right from home and look as if you just came from the salon. Their colors are crafted by master colorists who blend nuances of light, dark, cool, and warm tones to create over 55 multidimensional shades. And finding the perfect shade for you couldn't be easier. You just go to their website, madison-reed.com, and take their quiz that asks you all sorts of things like what you want your end result to be, what your hair texture is, your skin tone, how often you color your hair, etc. Then they match you with your perfect shade. I did it in less than a couple minutes, and the shade they recommended was exactly what I was going for. And now, Court Junkies can get 10% off plus free shipping on their first color kit with code COURT. Go to madison-reed.com and use the code COURT. That's madison-reed.com. Use code COURT. Did you know that many conventional deodorants contain aluminum, which forms a plug in your sweat glands to keep you from sweating? Yikes. Ever since I became aware of that fact, I have been searching for a new deodorant. Enter Native. Native's deodorant is made without aluminum, so you can feel better about what you're putting on your body. I'm not kidding when I tell you that I have tried a bunch of different deodorants, ones that are aluminum-free and free of other ingredients I can't pronounce, but nothing honestly worked as well. I would need to refresh my deodorant multiple times per day, and who wants to do that? Then I found Native at my local convenience store a few months ago, and it is by far my favorite. Finally, I put it on every morning and then I completely forget about it. It lasts all day and it even smells really good. Native is made with ingredients you've heard of, like coconut oil and shea butter. It's also vegan and is never tested on animals. They have over 10 scents. My favorite is the cucumber and mint. And they come in a variety of options for men, women, and teens. They also offer an unscented option and a baking soda-free formula for those of you with sensitivities. Best of all, there's no risk to trying it. Native offers free shipping on every order and 30-day free returns and exchanges in the United States. And now, Court Junkies can get 20% off your first purchase. Just go to nativedeodorant.com and use promo code JUNKIE during checkout. That's nativedeodorant.com and use promo code JUNKIE. Two hours after the bodies were discovered, Donald Hartung went with officers to the police station for an interview. He was wearing a light gray t-shirt, dark gray shorts, loafers, and a dark-colored baseball cap with his sunglasses hanging off the collar of his shirt. He appeared rather calm as he answered Special Agent Matt Infinger's questions about his family. He was read his Miranda rights, which he signed. He told the agent that his stepfather, Richard Smith, who had since passed away, had raised him his whole life, and that he and his half-brothers have a great relationship. He said they don't do a whole lot together, though, because they all work a lot. He said he last saw them 3 days ago, on Tuesday. He's off on Tuesdays, and he went there at about 1 or 1:30 in the afternoon. He played with the dogs in the yard and then went and talked to his mom, who was watching QVC. He made dinner, fried chicken, green beans, corn, biscuits, and French fries. And then after he ate with his mom and John, he helped John clean the dishes and threw a load of clothes in the laundry. He said he left between 5:30 and 6 after watching the news with his mom. Richard wasn't home from work yet when he left, and so his dinner was left in the oven. On Wednesday, he said he went to work from 3 to 11, his normal hours. He said he didn't talk to anyone in his family that day. He doesn't talk to them every day, so that wasn't unusual. Usually, he talks to his mom on the phone once a week. When the officer came to his door earlier that day and said they were trying to get in touch with his family, he tried calling his mom's phone, but she didn't pick up. It was weird to him because, quote, "My mom is always home," he said. Agent Infinger asked him if he owns any guns. Donald said he has owned quite a few, but that he doesn't own any now. He pawned the last one years ago. In this audio clip from his interrogation, Agent Infinger tells him that his family was shot. The interrogation audio is difficult to understand at times, so I'll be sure to recap what's being said after each clip.
How old are they? They were, it looked like they were shot. Shot.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
Well, it looked like they were shot. It's hard to tell because there was a lot of clothes on top of them.
There, Agent Infinger told him that it looked like his family was shot and that clothes were put on top of them. Clothes were put on top of them, Donald repeated. He shifted in his seat and then asked if they were robbed.
I don't think so. It looks like somebody came in and shot.
Yeah, looks like somebody knew him or did.
I don't know anybody that they know. Has anybody ever had any problems with anybody with John having problems with anybody or our team? Not recently. Not that I know of. Have you had any problems with them at all? No. Any problems? So something happened when you were over there Tuesday night and you killed them? No. Nothing happened.
You sure?
Yes. If something happened, that was the time to tell me. I would not tell my mother and my brother.
Agent Infinger told him that it looked like it was someone who knew them. Donald said he doesn't know of anyone who had any problems with them, that he definitely didn't. How does it make you feel to hear your family was killed? Agent Infinger asked. Donald replied that it makes him feel really bad. When Agent Infinger said he didn't look too upset, Donald said he was trying to control himself, that he's trying not to look at it right now.
I love my mother and I love my brothers. I love my dad just like he was my own father. I mean, my real father. He was my own father. I would never harm my family. Never. Never harm my mother. Brothers.
Donald insisted that he would never harm his family. Agent Infinger asked if he ever got jealous because his brothers live with his mom. Donald laughed and said he's been renting his house for 15 years and that he loves it. He said he doesn't want anything to do with that house at all. Why? Agent Infinger asked. Because my mom just died in there, he responded. At one point in the interview, Agent Infinger said that his partner just called him and told him for sure how the three were killed. They were shot, he said.
Looks like the brother John was just sitting there watching TV. Somebody was shot while he was sitting in his chair. And then the mother sitting in her chair. Somebody shot her. while she was watching TV. Then drug her back to her bedroom. Oh my God. And then, and this is what I'm thinking. You were probably still there. Then RT comes home, sees John in there, and he shot him in that bedroom where John was watching TV.
Agent Infinger said John and Von Seal were both sitting and watching TV when they were shot. He told Donald that he likely then waited for RT to come home and then killed him too. Donald again said he didn't shoot anybody, that he has never shot anybody, but Agent Infinger persisted.
It's a little hard for me to believe because your mother's pretty much the only family you got.
Yes.
And you've shown no emotion the whole time you've been in here. And you know that they could do. I mean, it's like you almost prepared yourself for this. You've had days to prepare yourself for this.
Agent Infinger accused him of showing no emotion and said that he likely had days to prepare himself. He then asked Donald why they would be covered up with blankets and clothes. Donald said, I have no idea. I have no idea.
I mean, it makes no sense for somebody to come in there, a total stranger, and to kill them the way that they were killed and put that much stuff on top of them. It makes no sense whatsoever. Whoever did this...
It makes no sense for me to go in there and do something like that either.
Why?
You know why?
You know them.
Of course I know them. I love them. That's my family.
Exactly. And you couldn't stand the thought of sitting there seeing them after you killed them, so you put this stuff up. Now the question is, why would you kill them?
Donald said he had no reason to kill his family, that there was nothing his mom wouldn't do for him, and that he loved her to death. He said he doesn't know who did it. When asked if he would provide a sample of his DNA, he said, of course. Agent Infinger then leaves the room for a few minutes, and in the meantime, another officer comes in and starts shuffling some papers around on the table. He casually asks, how's it going? And Donald says, not good. Then, as the officer is walking out of the room, Donald says quietly, they just told me that my whole family was killed. Oh yeah? The officer asks. Yeah, my whole family, Donald says. The officer asks what happened. He said they were all shot to death, Donald tells him, in their home. The officer asks him if Agent Infinger has asked him any questions yet. Yeah, he seems to think I did it, Donald says. Why does he say that? The officer asks. I don't know. I guess because I was over there the day of the killings, Donald replies. Agent Infinger then comes back into the room. He brought a manila envelope to take a swab of Donald's DNA. Agent Infinger asked Donald if he would be upset if his dog died. Donald said, damn right I would be upset. It would be like losing part of my family. Agent Infinger pointed out that the dog is all he has left now because everyone in his family is gone. I know that. You told me that, Donald said. That's all I got. If I lost that dog, I'd be really, really upset. Maybe not like how I am now, but I'd be very upset, he said.
I mean, you don't seem like you're upset at all.
Well, I'm upset. Maybe you don't know it, but I know it.
Agent Infinger asked Donald if he would take a lie detector test. He said yes. Donald was taken home after the interview, but officers called him back in later that night. By that time, they had gone through the crime scene and found no evidence of forced entry or of a robbery. They had more questions for Donald. This interview started around 1 a.m. Agent Infinger asked Donald about a Ouija board they had seen in his house and asked if he's a Wiccan. Donald said yes, he has been for about 3 years. It's a religion based on nature, he said. They celebrate seasonal changes and different holidays. Agent Infinger asked if it has anything to do with moon phases, and Donald said yes. It has a lot to do with moon phases, he said. That Wiccan stuff, and these ceremonies or whatever you do, Do you have anything like sacrifices or anything? Agent Infinger asked. Donald chuckled and said, no, there's no sacrifices. He said there's nothing about harming or killing anyone. Agent Infinger said that when there's two full moons, sometimes Wiccans will offer a sacrifice. Donald said he's never done that, that it's when it's a blue moon and that it's very, very rare. It's kind of interesting what they do, Agent Infinger said. They drain the blood out of their sacrifice and hit them in the head, and then they cover them to keep them warm. I don't know anything about that, Donald said, emphasizing that he wouldn't even hurt an animal. What's ironic about all of this is that's the same way your family was killed, Agent Infinger said. The same way my family was killed, Donald asked. I thought they were shot in the head. No, Agent Infinger said.
You went over there and you killed your mother and you killed your brother and waited at RTO and you killed him. Okay? And you killed them all the same time.
Stabbing. They were stabbed. Oh my God.
There, Agent Infinger informed him that they were stabbed, too. Oh my God, Donald said. Donald went home that night, but 3 months later, he would be sitting behind a jail cell, staring at a possible death penalty sentence. We all want to do the right thing to keep our bodies healthy in the long run. But no matter how many kale salads or green smoothies we eat, we're still most likely not getting all the essential nutrients we need. Enter Ritual, the obsessively researched vitamin for women. Ritual's essentials have the nutrients most of us don't get enough of from food, all in their clean, absorbable forms. No shady additives or ingredients that can do more harm to your body than good. Two easy-to-take capsules provide 9 nutrients you need to support a strong foundation for your health. There are so many things I love about Ritual. One of my favorite has to be that you can take it on an empty stomach, which is super helpful when you're on the go and can't necessarily time it with eating. I also like that there's just 2 vitamins to take and they don't have a funky smell or an aftertaste to them. In fact, there's a mint tab in every bottle to keep it fresh. Ritual is also traceable and transparent. For all you obsessive label readers out there, all of Ritual's vegan-friendly, sugar-free, non-GMO, gluten-free, and allergen-free ingredients and their sources are out there for the whole world to see. A subscription is easy to start, and it's easy to snooze. It's only $1 a day to have all the essential nutrients your body needs delivered every month, no strings attached. But better health doesn't happen overnight. And so right now, Ritual is offering Court Junkies 10% off during your first 3 months. That's right. You can get 10% off and get Ritual delivered right to your door. Fill in the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/court to start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/court. Donald's trial began in January 2020.
Von Seal Smith, Richard Smith, and John Smith. Those are the 3 people that were killed in this case. And they are the mother and the 2 half-brothers of this defendant, Donald Hartung. The 3 of them, Von Seal, Richard, and John, all lived together in their home on Deerfield Drive. And on Tuesday, July 28th of 2015, you will see that this family was brutally and violently murdered by this defendant.
Assistant State's Attorney Bridget Jensen gave the opening statements on behalf of the state of Florida. The motive for the killings, she said, was money. Von Seal, in her will, left everything to Richard and John.
She specifically excluded him from her will. And what you will see during the course of this trial through evidence is that for him to get anything, they all 3 had to die.
She told the court that Donald would go to the Smith home every Tuesday and cook dinner for the family. He was off on Tuesdays. He would then eat with his mom and brother John and leave Richard's food in the oven for when he got home, as Richard typically worked later on Tuesdays. On July 28th, 2015, Donald went over there and cooked dinner. And that is the last day the family was known to be alive.
The defendant went over there that Tuesday. He cooked fried chicken, frozen corn, frozen green beans, French fries, and biscuits. Richard's was left in the oven.
She said the evidence will show that after they ate, Donald then killed his mom and John. She said he cleaned up the blood and the food. He took blankets and clothes and piled them on top of John's body in the den. He then moved his mom's body to John's room down the hallway and then covered her with clothing and blankets. He took rugs and placed them on top of the bloody drag marks, and then he waited for Richard to come home. At about 7 p.m., she said Richard walked into the den and Donald shot him in the right ear. It wasn't a very good shot and didn't do any major damage, but she said the shot was strong and startling enough to stun him. Donald then slit his throat and placed blankets, clothing, and items on top of Richard's body, too.
It will be clear to you through the evidence in this case that this family was murdered that Tuesday while this defendant was there cooking their last meal.
She said because Donald was excluded from the will, he had to kill all three of them in order for him to be included. As she said this, Donald, who appeared to be listening intently at the defense table, mouthed the word no. Donald's attorney, Michael Griffith, told the jury that Prosecutor Jensen's opening statement was masterful, but that it leaves out facts or lack of facts. He acknowledged that Donald would go over to the family's house and cook dinner every Tuesday. He said he did this for years. He would also visit sometimes on other days to watch football or to hang out with his family. So as far as DNA in this case is concerned, he said you could expect that Donald's DNA would naturally be all over the house.
You're also going to hear what contact DNA is. I suggest to you that you'll hear testimony that contact DNA means when I'm here and I'm touching this lectern, if someone were to put my legal assistant's purse on top of it, that my DNA could be on her purse, not because I touched her purse, but because she put it on top of my DNA. That is what's called contact DNA.
He told the court that there is no evidence that Donald knew about the will and that investigators never bothered to look at anyone else. They just zeroed in on Donald. As for who the real killer is, he said he doesn't have to answer that, but it wasn't his client.
There is no indication of any physical evidence that he committed any of the murders. There was no gun found. There was no gunshot residue found on any of his clothing. There was no blood found at his house. There was no blood found in his car. There was nothing to link him in any way to these murders besides his DNA at his mom's house where he went at least every Tuesday to cook dinner for her and his two half-brothers.
He also said there would be no testimony that Donald didn't like his family or was mad at them.
There is nothing. These murders, when you see the photographs of the crime scene, they were done in a rage. An angry rage. You are not going to hear any testimony from any witness that's going to say my client had an explosive temper, ever yelled, screamed at his mother or his brothers, or in any way fought with them. In fact, he dearly loved his family.
He asked the jury to find Donald Hartung not guilty. It was Friday morning, and Richard Smith hadn't shown up to work for his job at the Department of Homeland Security. He had had a scheduled day off on that Wednesday, but Thursday, and now Friday, he had been a no-show. It wasn't like him, and so his supervisor, Hal McCord, drove out to the Smith home to see if he was there. He noted that Richard's white SUV was parked in the driveway, along with his mother's car.
I parked in the driveway. I walked past his car. They had a closed-in garage on that side of the house, and there was a doorbell and a door there. So I walked to that door, and I rang the doorbell.
Okay. Did anybody answer?
No, ma'am.
Where did you go from there?
Well, I actually rang the doorbell more than once. And then I walked around to the front of the house.
Okay. What did you see at the front of the house?
Same thing as I did on the side. Rang the doorbell a couple of times, listened for noises, whatever.
Okay. Did you get any response from the front door?
No, ma'am.
Did you notice anything around the front door?
Yes, ma'am.
What did you see?
There were a whole bunch of packages piled up on the porch.
He called 911 and then walked around to the back.
I did not see anything. I looked behind the bushes. There were azalea bushes in the yard and a garden shed in the yard. So I looked back behind them and walked up to the back fence looking for, you know, anything unusual in the backyard, you know, drag marks, body, I mean, whatever was there. And there was nothing didn't seem to be anything out of place.
He then waited for help to arrive. He told the court that he was concerned that morning because Richard was a big man, over 6 feet tall. He was concerned that he had had some sort of a medical emergency and that the family didn't know how to contact Richard's work. That's what he expected to find when he went there. Agent Andrew Smith with the Escambia County Sheriff's Office was the first officer who responded to the wellness check call. It was 9:53 a.m. on Friday, July 31st, 2015. After speaking with Hal and walking around the outside of the house himself, he drove over to Donald's house, whom Hal had had listed as a family contact for Richard. When Donald answered the door, Agent Smith told him that Richard's supervisor hadn't heard from him in a few days and was concerned about him and his family. He asked Donald when the last time he had spoken to them was. Donald said he goes there every Tuesday and cooks them dinner. He last saw his mom and John around 5:30 p.m. that earlier Tuesday. He hadn't seen Richard in about 2 weeks. Agent Smith described Donald's demeanor to the court as calm and relaxed. He said he asked him to go to the family home with him, and Donald agreed. When they got to the Smith house, he asked Donald if he would be willing to write a written statement that would give him permission to enter the residence, and Donald did. And so when EMS and the fire department arrived, they used a credit card to jimmy the back door open. Daryl Singleton, another officer with the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, told the jury that he didn't see any broken windows or kicked-in doors. There were no signs of forced entry. When Donald arrived at the home with Agent Smith, Officer Singleton asked him about his family. Donald said their vehicles were all there, that they should all be there. They're always here. They never go anywhere, he told him. Officer Singleton said that Donald did not have a key to the house. Donald told him that they were always home, and so he never needed one. The family dog, which was located inside, was given to Donald, who then took him back to his house before going to the police station to be interviewed. Christine Rollins was a crime scene technician with the Escambia County Sheriff's Office back when the crime occurred. Rollins had responded to the Smith family home and had analyzed the scene. She testified that there were 4 QVC packages on the front porch, and the mailbox was full, with newspapers from the 29th, 30th, and 31st, that Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. The backyard was big and had a chain-link fence all around. The home, she said, was very, very cluttered. She noted that there was dog food in the dog food bowl, along with water. Photos of the home were shown to the jury. Richard's body was found on the floor, and John's was on a love seat, both in the den, piled high with clothing, blankets, and rugs. Von Seal was found face down on the floor of John's room, also covered with clothes, blankets, and rugs. There was blood on some of the furniture and bloodstains under the hallway rugs, as though someone had used the rugs to cover up bloody drag marks. Rollins said she was there for about 12 hours that day and that the house was secured when she left, with an officer assigned to the scene. She took the trash can and some other items with her. She put the can in a big leaf bag and put stuff around it so the items inside the can wouldn't move. When she got back to the lab, she took the can to the packaging room and took photos of it while removing items layer by layer. There was a long list of items found in the trash can, including a broken ceramic goose, some pieces with blood on them, bloody paper towels, multiple cigarette butts, one towards the top on top of a bloody paper towel, and others found at the bottom. Two purses, two pairs of glasses, one pair with blood on them, a BlackBerry, pieces of a kitchen genius with blood on them, and a cord for a webcam with blood on it. Rollins testified that she tested the trash can itself, the broken ceramic goose pieces, the coffee cup, and the kitchen genius, but they all came up negative for fingerprints. A few days later, she went back to the scene. There were two garbage cans inside the yard that she analyzed. There was a garbage bag in one of them. Inside the bag were water bottles, food, including French fries, corn, green beans, empty bags of frozen green beans and frozen corn, magazines, and a newspaper dated Tuesday, July 28th, 2015, along with the QVC bag with Richard's name on it. Rollins also tested some of the items that were on top of John and Von Seal's bodies. No fingerprints were found. She testified that she collected about 400 or 500 items and swabs in this case, and that some swabs were then sent to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement for testing. She said investigators decide what gets swabbed and sent. She told the jury that all the TVs in the house were off and that the temperature in the home was very hot. Another crime scene technician, Lindsay Eliopoulos, testified that there was an unlocked safe found in Richard's room with a large amount of money inside, totaling more than $13,000. Lawrence Masita, another crime scene technician, testified about what he found inside Donald's house. He said in one of the rooms, there were multiple tables that had candles, figurines, and papers with pentagrams on them. Another table had an owl figurine, books, candles, and a Ouija board. In one of the table drawers were books on witchcraft and a spool of rope. He tested areas of the house with Blue Star to see if there was any blood. He testified that small area rugs, the top of the toilet seat, and two areas on the floor in the living room by the front door tested positive, along with Donald's shoes that he had been wearing. They were swabbed for DNA. A box of .22 caliber ammunition and five shotgun shells were found, but no firearms nor bullets that matched what Richard had been shot with, which was a 9mm, were found. Tammy Duncan worked at the Department of Homeland Security with Richard. She testified that not only were they coworkers, but that Richard was her best friend. They didn't hang out often outside work because she said Richard was busy with his family a lot, but they went to lunch together almost every day and texted each other constantly. She testified that Richard had a work BlackBerry and a personal iPhone 6. He typically kept his BlackBerry clipped on his belt and his iPhone on the outside of his pocket. She recalled the last time she saw Richard on Tuesday, July 28th. She said they went to lunch together, as they always did. He ate a sandwich and crinkly fries that he loved. Later, he left work at the same time as she did, at about 6:35 p.m. They drove home the same direction, and she last saw him as she turned off into a shopping center, and he went towards his home. That was about 6:50, she estimated. She sent him a text message around 8:30, saying she hoped he would have a good day the next day, since he was off. He never responded. That was unusual, she said. On Wednesday, she texted him at about 2:30 about an issue with work. She texted him again at 3:30 about another issue, and still no response. That, too, was unusual. She said in all the years she had known him, he never not showed up for work. But on Thursday, he was a no-show. She texted him in the morning to see if he wanted anything from McDonald's, but no response. She did the same thing the next morning on Friday, no response. She said she was aware that on Tuesdays, Donald would go over to the family home to make dinner.
And on Tuesdays, how did Richard seem about going home?
He was usually hesitant.
Would he stay late?
Yes, he'd usually be 6-7 o'clock before he'd go home.
Okay. And would you sometimes stay with him?
Yes.
Special Agent Matt Infinger testified that he first saw Donald in a patrol vehicle.
And what was his demeanor when you first contacted him?
Just nonchalant, just didn't seem too worried about what was going on.
The interview Agent Infinger did with Donald was played for the court. In it, he asked Donald how his mom was able to afford purchasing so many things from QVC all the time. And he said he doesn't know, but he reckons it's from his dad's retirement. He was asked if John is bipolar. He said he has no idea. He doesn't even know what that is. When Agent Infinger described it, he said he may have acted that way when he was young, but not anymore. Agent Infinger told him that neighbors didn't see any cars out of place or anyone else at the house since Monday. He said neighbors saw John get the mail on Monday, but not on Tuesday. Agent Infinger told him that he probably killed John before he could get to it that day, but Donald insisted he didn't. Here's another clip from that interview where Agent Infinger gets even more forceful, telling Donald that he did murder his family.
I'm totally innocent. Now, I did not kill my mother. And I sure as hell wouldn't kill my brother or my mother.
Let me ask you this. Did your brother kill your mother and you killed him?
No.
I don't know nothing about this.
This is the first time I've ever heard any of this stuff. You're talking about they were dead, shot?
Yeah.
I don't know nothing about it.
You mean you're going to come in here and tell me you got three people dead in a house?
Yes.
You're going to come in here. You're the last one to see them. You didn't kill them, and you're sitting there, and I've told you that your mom was shot and drugged to her bedroom, and you're going to sit here and not show any emotion whatsoever?
I've got emotion, sir.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
Now, you killed these people. You killed your family.
No.
Why?
I did not.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
In the interview, Agent Infinger then implied that the motive for Donald killing his family could be a financial one. Donald told him that his mom was always willing to give him money. All he had to do was ask, but he said he didn't need any. He then walked Agent Infinger through what happened when he got to the family home on that Tuesday. He said when he got there, he played frisbee with the dog a few times and then went in the house. His mom was in her chair in the den, as she always was, and John was watching TV in the back bedroom. He started cooking dinner around 3:30. John did the dishes and he helped him. After they ate, he watched QVC with his mom, and then she put on Fox News. He said he couldn't remember what show was on at that time. Agent Infinger asked what the commentators were talking about, and he said he thinks it was something about Trump. He just watched for a few minutes and then left around 5:30 or 6 at the latest. After that, he went home with his dog and watched TV. When Agent Infinger asked what he watched, he said he didn't remember. Agent Infinger was openly suspicious about this, saying that if he did the same routine every Tuesday, he must know what he watched. The same shows are on every Tuesday. But Donald said he wasn't really watching, just looking at a magazine and playing with his dog. Agent Infinger asked if he smokes, and he said yes, he does. He's the only one who smokes in the house. Prosecutor Jensen asked Agent Infinger on the stand why he never gave Donald a lie detector test after Donald had agreed to take one. He said none of the polygraphers were there at the department that day, and so they couldn't find anyone to do it. It's not admissible in court anyway, he said. Agent Infinger said there were certain things they were never able to find, in addition to the gun used to shoot Richard. The keys to Richard's car were never located, and nor was Richard's wallet. He said as far as video surveillance goes, no neighbors have any video equipment, nor did any of the incoming or outgoing roads. They seized Donald's cell phone, but no info was obtained there either. They weren't able to download anything because it was a pay-as-you-go phone. Prosecutor Jensen asked why only a few things were submitted for fingerprints, and he said he felt their best chance of getting evidence was DNA, not fingerprints. He He said they contacted Donald's employer during their investigation and learned that he had sent in a resignation letter on August 21st, 2015. The letter read, quote, "To whom it may concern, I, Donald W. Hartung, hereby resign from your employment due to the murder of my family and the necessity for me to handle personal matters. Sincerely, Donald W. Hartung." Donald was arrested on October 27th, 2015. On cross, Donald's attorney hammered Agent Infinger on why he suspected Donald so soon after the murders. He pointed out that he had arrived on the scene around noon and that interview with Donald started a little after 1:30.
So you had been on the crime scene for maybe an hour before you started interviewing Mr. Hartung, is that correct?
Possibly, yes.
And do you always treat the victims of a crime the way you treated Mr. Hartung?
What do you mean, victim?
Well, his parents, his mother, and his brothers were killed, so he was a victim of murder.
His family was the victims.
Okay. Well, he's also a victim, isn't he? Don't you consider people that are relatives of people that were murdered victims?
You could, yes.
Okay. And I asked you, do you always treat the victims in that manner?
Not always. It depends on the circumstance.
Okay. In this circumstance, you had been on the case for about an hour and a half when you decided to accuse Mr. Hartung of murdering his family. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. What evidence at that point did you have that he had done anything other than being the sole surviving member of a murdered family?
He was the last one to see him alive. Okay. The home did not appear to be broke into. The way the bodies were, it didn't look like somebody unknown to them killed them.
Donald's attorney said that Agent Infinger didn't even know how they had been murdered at that point. And he pointed out that Donald voluntarily went to the sheriff's department, didn't ask for an attorney, and answered all of his questions. He didn't interfere with the search of his residence and was fully cooperative. He also asked about the blood evidence that crime scene investigators found in Donald's house.
When you searched Mr. Hartung's residence, one of the, I believe it was one of the crime scene people, said that some suspected blood was found.
Yes.
I think on his shoes and on a carpet and on the floor in his residence.
Yes.
Did any of that, quote, suspected blood ever relate to any of the victims of this crime?
No.
Was there anything in Mr. Hartung's home that related to the victims of the crime?
No.
Did you seize knives from his residence?
Yes.
And they didn't relate to any of the victims?
No.
Agent Infinger was asked if they ever looked at other suspects. He said they looked at other avenues, but no other suspects were developed.
No evidence that we found or had processed led us to anyone else.
Well, you said that you determined not to do fingerprint testing.
I didn't say we determined not to. I said
you did
that
limited fingerprint?
Correct.
Did I misspeak?
Yes.
Okay, so you did limited fingerprint. Did you go through the house for fingerprints to see if there were any strange fingerprints there that didn't match up to the victims or to Mr. Hartung?
I know the doors and things like that were fingerprinted, and we didn't find anything like
that. How about light switches?
I don't recall that being.
How about thermostats?
I don't recall that either.
How about the kitchen counters or the table surface or any hard surfaces?
I know it was swabbed for DNA.
How about for fingerprints?
I don't believe it was.
He was then asked about the questions he asked Donald about the Wiccan religion. He told the jury that afterwards he had talked to someone who told him that sacrifice was not a Wiccan practice after all. He agreed that if investigators were able to get into the back door with a credit card, then someone else could have done that too, without leaving any marks. And he said the thermostat was turned down when they arrived, but he doesn't know who did that.
There's been some question about the thermostat at the house. Do you know if anyone turned the thermostat down or turned it up?
I know it was turned down when we arrived, yes.
Do you know who did that?
I don't.
And do you know what the temperature was at the time they arrived?
I don't recall, no.
And there were more than one thermostats in the house. Do you know which one they turned down?
I believe it was the one somewhere near the kitchen.
Okay. What about the other ones?
I couldn't tell you.
So we don't know that?
No.
He said he believes that it was above 76 degrees when they arrived and that someone from the crime scene unit turned it down, but he's not sure. He agreed that the temperature at a murder scene is important, but that he doesn't remember the details about it. Donald's attorney then turned his focus to gunshot residue. Agent Infinger told the jury that whether or not someone has gunshot residue on them can tell you whether someone has fired a firearm or was close to a firearm going off. He was asked if he took any of Donald's clothes to test for that, and he said no. When CSI investigated the den where Richard and John were found, there was a projectile from a 9mm found there. And Donald's attorney pointed out that when they searched Donald's home, they didn't find any 9mm bullets, just 22 cartridges, nothing that matched what shot Richard. Agent Infinger agreed. All of the murder weapons were never found. Prosecutors believe the victims were beaten, their throats slit, and then Richard was shot. But a hammer that was found in the Smith family kitchen was determined to be one of them. The medical examiner said it matched the type of blows to the heads of the victim. Agent Infinger said the DNA on the hammer belonged to Von Seal, John, Richard, and Donald, but he agreed that he doesn't know when the DNA was put there. Donald's attorney then brought up how in the second interview, Sergeant Kevin Coxwell told Donald that they could prove he was at the family home after 6 p.m. based on his cell phone's GPS. He asked Agent Infinger if they were ever able to prove that, and he said no, they couldn't prove that he was there. The cell towers were the same between Donald's house and the family home. Agent Infinger also said on cross that there were hand towels found in the washing machine. Was there any blood from the victims on them? No. Any DNA from Donald? No. There was also no blood found in any of the drains at the home either. In fact, other than the chair where Von Seal was sitting, the drag marks on the floor, and the area where Richard and John were found, no blood was found anywhere else. Agent Infinger also told the jury that Donald didn't have any injuries on him, including on his hands. Martin Purifoy entered the courtroom wearing a green and white striped prison jumpsuit. An officer took his handcuffs off once he got up to the stand. Purifoy testified that he has 6 or 7 felony convictions and is currently serving a 30-year sentence for attempted murder after attacking someone with a hammer. He was looking at a life sentence until the prosecutor agreed to give him a cap of 30 years for his cooperation in this case. He agreed that he was hoping that, based on his testimony, the judge would reduce his sentence, but no one had promised him anything. Purifoy told the jury that he met Donald Hartung in March of 2016, a month after his own arrest. He was housed in the same pod with Donald at the Escambia County Jail. He said he and Donald initially started talking about football. Donald liked Alabama, and he liked Florida State. They talked all the time, discussing their cases and religion. He said Donald believed in Wicca and gave him some books to read on the subject. He wanted him to join too. He said others in the jail were actually scared of Donald. They thought he was a witch. He testified that Donald told him he had a son who was molested at 3 years old by Donald's brother, John. According to Donald, he told his mom about it, but his mom didn't believe him. Just said that John was special. Purifoy said that made Donald mad and that he hated his mother because of it. He said Donald told him that his mom treated him differently from the other boys because they had different dads. He was also really mad about both himself and his son being left out of the will. Prosecutor Jensen asked if Donald ever talked about Richard, and he said Donald said Richard was all right. Purifoy told the jury that Donald told him that he couldn't just kill his mom, that he had to kill his brothers too, because otherwise the money in his mom's will would just go to them. According to Purifoy, Donald said he had been planning and thinking about killing them for the last few years, but that his Ouija board finally made him do it. Purifoy then gave the details of the murder, as he says Donald told to him.
Well, did he tell you when he went over there?
Yeah, he went up like 11, early, like 11 o'clock, something like that.
Okay. And do you know what day?
He said on a Tuesday. He always goes there on a Tuesday.
He said he always goes there on a Tuesday?
Yeah, yes, ma'am.
And when he went over there on the Tuesday, did he tell you what he did?
Okay, so he first said, when he went over there, he said he left his dog, Zena, because he knew what he was going to do. So he left the dog over there, then he went over there and cooked.
Okay, did he tell you what he cooked?
Say he cooked chicken and corn, I think it's green beans or something like that, and biscuits.
Okay, and after he cooked, did he tell you what he did?
Okay, he said he went and took some cameras down because his mother got hurt one time. She fell, and I guess the brother Richard had installed some cameras. He took them down.
Okay, all right. And did he say if the family ate or not?
Say it again? Yeah, they ate.
Okay, and then what happened after they ate?
He said he killed his brother after that. Which is John.
I'm sorry?
He killed his brother, John.
Okay. Did he tell you how he killed his brother, John?
He said he hit him in the head from behind and cut his throat.
Did he tell you what he hit him with?
I think he said a hammer. I can't recall.
And then did you say he slit his throat?
He said his throat, cut his throat.
Cut his throat.
Yeah.
Did he tell you where John was when this happened?
He said it was like in a den watching TV.
Did he tell you what he did after he did that to John?
He went to his mother, then he tortured her so she can tell the combination for the safes and stuff.
He said he tortured her, I'm sorry?
He tortured her.
How?
He cut a left pinky finger so he can tell the combination for the safes and stuff.
Donald told him he then hit her in the head and slit her throat. He said Donald said that afterwards he went and got money out of a safe in a closet in his mom's room. He also got money out of his brother's safe, although he didn't say where that one was. He then unlocked the gate in the backyard to make it look like someone else could have done it. Donald told him that he changed his clothes at the house and put his clothes and gloves he had been wearing in a bag, which he then gave to a priest, along with some money. He said Donald's plan for a defense was to point to other possible suspects, by saying that John may have molested a child at Walmart or that Richard was messing around with a woman who was married. In order to add credibility to Purifoy's testimony, prosecutors called Agent Infinger back to the stand. He testified that when he interviewed Purifoy in 2016, Purifoy told him about one of the safes in the home, even before they knew about it. Purifoy's testimony about Von Seal being tortured was also corroborated by an actual injury found on her during the autopsy. Von Seal's pinky was injured, a fact that only the medical examiner's report briefly mentioned. He said the fact that blood was not found in Donald's car and the fact that the padlock to the backyard gate was unlocked were also not mentioned in any reports. Seaborn Roddenberry Jr. was another witness for the state. He testified that he's a lawyer who prepared Von Seal's will in February of 2009.
Did she exclude anybody in that will?
She basically left everything to two sons and said she made no provision in the will for the defendant in this case, Donald Wayne Hartung.
He was asked who the sole heir would be, however, if Von Seal, Richard, and John were all deceased.
The sole heir at law would be her living son, Donald Wayne Hartung.
Next in line would be Donald's son, Donald Jr. Mark Bailey used to work with Donald at a security company. He said he and Donald used to talk about guns a lot, mostly about 9mm. When asked if Donald ever talked about financial problems he was having, he said yes. For example, Donald needed to get his car fixed and couldn't afford it. He testified that Donald also told him that if he got his share of his mom's money, he would quit and retire. Donald Hartung Jr., Donald's son, who is now 40 years old, also took the stand in his father's trial. He testified that his dad called him within a week or two of the murders and told him what had happened.
When I got the call, the wording was, let me think for a second. He said, son, they're all dead. I was like, it's kind of weird. What are you talking about? He's like, they're all dead. Your grandmother, RT, and John. They're all dead. That's how I found out.
Okay. And did he say anything about himself?
I believe that during that phone call, it's the first time I was told that he did not have anything to do with it.
Okay. And had you questioned whether he had anything to do with it, or how did that come up?
No, I didn't question it at all.
Okay. Did you question why he was saying that?
What do you mean?
He said, your family's dead. I didn't do it, right?
Yeah, well, he said they were dead, and he went into a little bit of the reason, you know, that something had happened with them in the house. Possibly they were murdered. And then we may have talked about some other stuff. I don't know. But that came up in the conversation. Yeah.
That he didn't do it?
Yeah.
Okay. But you hadn't questioned him at that point?
No.
Okay. He testified that he and his father weren't that close, that they only spoke every 6 months or so, and that he last physically saw him when he was 17 years old. He and his mom had divorced when he was about 15. Donald Jr. testified that when he was 4 years old, his uncle John, his dad's brother, exposed himself to him. John was a teenager at the time. He said he told his mom, who told his dad, who then went to Von Seal about it. He said Von Seal, who was his grandma, took John's side. After that incident, he said there was a rift between Von Seal, John and RT, and Donald. After the murders, before his arrest, his dad called him again.
I got a call, and the call actually started with him saying, you remember a long time ago when you were a little boy? And I was like, where are you going with this? He's like, you remember a long, long time ago when you're a little boy, a situation with Johnny? And then it clicked. I was like, why? I actually forgot about it at that point in time.
Right.
I was like, why are you telling me about this? He's like, and then that's when he went into the explanation that about the Walmart thing, where he thought that he had heard from an investigator, maybe from the Department of Defense or something, that John may have did something at a Walmart. And I guess it was kind of backing up, reinforcing the fact that he's maybe a predator or something like that.
Okay.
And that's how it's basically explained to me.
Jennifer Wilkerson, a crime lab analyst with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, testified about the DNA evidence in the case. She said the hammer that was found in the Smith residence, that is believed to be one of the murder weapons, tested positive for blood, and that it had DNA from Von Seal, John, Richard, and Donald on it. Donald's DNA was also found on the inside of Richard's belt, on the handle of Von Seal's purse, on Richard's checkbook, and on 5 cigarettes that were found in the trash can inside the home. One of the cigarettes also had Von Seal's DNA on it, along with the presence of blood. Wilkerson testified that Von Seal's blood was also found on the kitchen sink faucet. On cross-examination, Wilkerson said there was also DNA from an unidentified person on the handle of the hammer. Andrea Minyard, the medical examiner who performed the autopsies, testified about the victim's injuries, including Von Seal's, quote, traumatically amputated pinky finger. She said John's stomach content showed that he had corn and green beans. Von Seal's had corn. Richard's stomach had crinkly fries, which his coworker had testified earlier he had eaten for lunch on that Tuesday. After her testimony, the state then rested. The defense's first witness was a Wiccan minister named Paul Larson. Larson told the jury that if Donald had killed his family as a sacrifice, their bodies wouldn't have been covered with blankets and rugs. They would have been offered as a sacrifice to the divine. CSI analyst Christine Rollins was recalled to the stand for the defense. She testified that there were over 400 pieces of evidence in the case, and that she did not change gloves after handling each one. She also testified that she did not fingerprint the thermostat and doesn't know who turned the temperature down. Dr. Jonathan Arden, a forensic pathologist, testified that there were several things that struck him about this case, including the timing of death, which he said he had concerns about. He said it was odd that the dog hadn't yet fed on any of the victims, and that it was also odd that fly larvae had not yet gotten to the bodies either. He said he believes the deaths occurred after Tuesday, based on their body temperatures. Dennis Wallett, a former police chief and retired officer, testified about the handling of the evidence in the case. He said since the crime scene technicians didn't change gloves when analyzing each piece of evidence, they could have transferred Donald's DNA to the hammer, for example. He also said the logging of people in and out of the crime scene wasn't done in this case, and that's a problem.
Why is it important to know when people leave?
Because if the scene was altered in any way, you know it, when it may have been altered or what they have done. You could go back and link what was their purpose for being there and make a determination about that.
He called some of the procedures used in this case improper and said it's very problematic that Agent Infinger considered Donald a suspect within an hour of his arrival at the crime scene.
It's very problematic. Once you make a preliminary opinion based on a hunch or an instinct and you don't look at any other possibilities. For example, of the three victims, one was killed or at least attacked in a different manner. One was had a position with the Department of Homeland Security. Now, was he the target and these others a cover-up? We don't know. But once a detective develops a theory and only considers information which supports his or her theory, then you are either ignoring or refusing to accept other possibilities. So at least in the initial stages, okay, you could like him as a potential suspect, but to exclude all other considerations at that point is the antithesis of a sound, objective criminal investigation. The purpose of the investigation is to determine the truth of what happened, not what this detective thinks may have happened, particularly before the whole scene's processed and you gather all the information.
In her closing arguments, Prosecutor Jensen reiterated their theory on Donald's motive.
This family of three was minding their own business, staying to themselves, and taking care of one another for years. For years, and no one tried to harm them. Until that Tuesday, July 28th, 2015, when this defendant, Donald Hartung, already had in his mind that he was ready to retire. 58 years old. He wanted to cash in on his family's fortune. He wanted the money that he knew he was never going to get unless and until all three of his family members died.
She said John had over $200,000 in his account. Von Seal and Richard had over $300,000 in each of theirs.
And this defendant knew about it. Because remember, he told his coworker, Mr. Bailey, that his mom was wealthy, and when she died, he was going to get the money, quit his job, and retire. And lo and behold, ladies and gentlemen, 3 weeks later, this defendant submitted his letter of resignation.
She asked who knew the family's schedules, who also had a motive to murder. That man, she said, pointing at the defense table. She then went over the timeline again, saying that the family was killed on that Tuesday. She pointed out that Richard was wearing the exact same thing in surveillance video from work on Tuesday that he was when his body was found. And his last phone call was to his mom on his way home from work that night. His phone was never used to make any calls or send any text messages ever again. She displayed a photo of Von Seal's pill case, which showed her Tuesday PM pills still inside. She then showed a photo of the food that was left in the oven for Richard, food that went untouched and was still there when the bodies were found on that Friday. Donald's attorney told the jury that Donald was never able to grieve for his family because within an hour of their body's discovery, he was accused of being a murderer. He said there's no evidence Donald knew about his family's money. None whatsoever, he said. He also pointed out that Christine Rollins admitted that she did not change gloves for every piece of evidence. He said that in not doing that, there's transference. Nobody knows how much. That is bad crime scene work, he said.
You were sitting on the most serious and solemn cases that we have in the judicial system. And your verdict is incredibly important to the integrity of the system. And I ask you to consider all of the evidence, and after considering that evidence, to return a verdict of not guilty for each count of the indictment.
The jury deliberated for about 5 hours before finding Donald guilty. At his sentencing, Donald told the judge that he loved his jury, that they had paid close attention, but that they were duped. And you were duped, he said. My DNA in my mother's house, where I frequented all the time, Your Honor, that is not even real evidence. He said he is innocent and asked for a mistrial, which the judge denied. The jury then recommended a sentence of 3 consecutive life sentences. He was spared the death penalty. And that's all for this episode. As always, I'd love to know what you think about this case. Do you believe Donald murdered his family? Or do you believe the defense's case, that they only focused on Donald and didn't even look at other suspects? How would you have voted if you were on the jury? You can let me know by joining the conversation on Instagram at Court Junkie, by tweeting me at Court Junkie Pod, or by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. To learn how you can hear these episodes ad-free and how to support this podcast, visit courtjunkie.com/support. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.
From the network that brought you the Cold Case Files podcast comes I Survived, the classic stories you know, with new interviews, updating each woman's story with everything that happens after survival.
I survived because I convinced him that I was a person.
I survived because I was a smarter person than my assailant.
I survived because I believe God saved me.
Surviving is just the beginning of their story. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy podcasts that focus on investigative journalism, there's a new one out from Canada called Cool Mules. It's a bizarre story about a cocaine smuggling ring inside Vice Media, which was led by Vice Canada's music editor, a character known as Slava P. Here's a preview.
I genuinely thought you had an opportunity for me, like journalism.
I thought, this sounds cool. This sounds like buy a ticket to a huge Vice show.
Sounded like a multi-level marketing scheme, but for drug trafficking.
Oh, this is like Vice. Like, why am I being like a snitch about this?
This is absolutely a story about an important and growing and powerful media entity.
There are no villains in this story. There's no winners, but there's no villains.
I'm Kasia Mihailovic, and this is Cool Mules.